Welcome to Final Verdict. I'm Bell.
I'm Jamie.
I'm Ploof.
And this week, we're doing things out of order. That's right. It's not a topic. It's my pick. Next week, we have a guest, Arthur, social media mogul, who chose the album Yeet, or he chose an album by Yeet, the album Life.
But this Yeet week, Life.
We're skipping that, kind of, I guess. Anyways.
Things are getting moved around.
Yeah. This week, we're doing Empire of the Sun, Walking on a Dream, the album I got from our boss, and I would say close friend, Linus Sebastian, a.k.a. Linus Tech Tips. I made him buy it for me. And we'll talk more about why this album...
You made Advanced Micro Devices buy it for you.
Yes, that's right. AMD / Linus bought it for me. / our procurement team, I guess. If we want to get real nitty gritty.
And then someone on Discogs sold it to you.
It's true. But it's an expensive...
You are the global economy.
How much was it?
Well, we'll talk about it at the end. But it's expensive. What? There's a reason why I made someone else buy it for me. And why we're doing this for this special episode. Because right now, you can probably watch the video that this is in. Wow. What's the title going to be? I think it's something like The Stealthiest Upgrade or something like that.
This guy farts a lot.
You can probably see my face on the thumbnail.
There's it's a handsome. Pinball machine in it.
And an arcade machine.
Why both? Who knows?
And another very expensive record. The other record I got was $400 and something.
What's the other one you got? Why didn't you pick that?
Oh, it's a Katamari Damacy.
Katamari Damacy.
Oh my god, they're going for $400 now. Oh,
yeah, $400 and something.
Mindfully too.
But you know, I didn't want to choose a video game OST as my record of the week, so we're doing this one, which is
probably
better.
It's so good though.
The soundtrack's
nice. No. You know it's good.
You did too many nahs, but that's fine.
No, I did not. Fine.
Empire of the Sun is an Australian electronic music duo made up of Luke Steele and Nick Littlemore. Luke Steele is a very cool name, by the way.
Sounds like a porn star name. Luke Steele.
Sorry, I don't watch that kind of stuff. So
I don't know, but
the band was formed in 2007, only a year before releasing this album, Walking on a Dream, which obviously came out in 2008, if you can't do the math. You might know them from their title song because it's an absolute banger. I first started listening to them back around the time this album came out because Walking on a Dream was super popular, the song that is. And the look and feel of Empire of the Sun's music videos are super unique with the flashy Chinese-inspired outfits and great fushigi moves. If you don't know what a fushigi is, I'm not going to tell you.
That's with the ball, right? Where you like move your hands around the ball and you can't... It doesn't look like the ball's moving.
Google fushigi. It's definitely worth it. I love... Whenever I see fushigi out in the wild, I take a video and I send it to a friend of the podcast, Adam Sondergaard.
He loves fushigi.
He does. He loves fushigi.
Former guest, Adam Soundgarden.
But either way, after watching the music video a dozen times, I like their Facebook page or whatever you did in 2008, and I've been listening to their stuff ever since. I actually ended up seeing them live at a music festival in 2014, and it still stands out as one of the best live shows I have ever seen.
Did they play Walking on a Dream?
You better believe it. They're awesome. They're awesome. They have a huge stage presence. Please go on tour again.
Do they have a tiger like on stage?
Luke and Nick met back in the year 2000 after being introduced to one another in a bar, and they ended up collaborating on several songs together for each other's separate projects, but mostly worked and wrote separately because they live on opposite sides of Australia, and Australia is very large.
Yeah, and there's a lot of nothing in
between.
And
it's all upside down.
And it's hot, and there's spiders and kangaroos and koalas.
Crocodiles.
Wallabies.
After deciding to work together and forming Empire of the Sun, they worked on the album even though Nick Littlemore was still mainly focused on his personal project, PNAU, PNAU, Pinau?
Pinau.
Which is a fun electronic dance music trio. But the focus probably shifted pretty quick as they released the title track, Walking in a Dream, as their first single, ended up charting on the Australian Singles Board. They released their album, which also charted, and they left on their first tour. But one thing to note is that even though Empire of the Sun goes on tours, Nick Littlemore doesn't. He doesn't do any of the live performances because he said that he always felt that once you make a record, it's not yours anymore.
What?
And I don't know what that means.
Because everyone else listens to it or something, so it's no longer like
it's
personal?
Their music now, so I can't play it anymore. Like, I don't get that.
It's really pretentious.
Man,
or something.
That sounds
like
something you would hear in an interview like in Spinal Tap.
Yeah.
We don't go on tour because it's the people's music now.
Anyways, the band has seen some mild success, but Walking on a Dream is probably their most popular album. Their next one, which is called Ice on the Dune, which came out in 2013, is also pretty popular. Had some hits, but I feel like this one overall was more popular. I think it's pretty solid. I do prefer the second album a little bit more. It has some really high highlights, and I listen to songs from that album more often. But I feel like Walking on a Dream as a whole, like I do quite enjoy listening to it. Yeah, it's, like I said, a real fancy album we'll talk about later, but what did you guys think?
They had me in the first half.
It's funny, they had me in the second half.
And yeah, they had me across the entire thing. They had me across the entire thing.
I like the first five tracks. The second five tracks, not so much. But but the really weird thing was I got through the first four tracks and I was like, okay, well, let me pause this for a second. Let's see how much it is. I'll buy this album. It's so good. I found out that it was a lot of money. And then I didn't buy it. And then I continued listening to the album and I was like, wow, I dodged a bullet there. I was ready to just spend a whole bunch on that.
To be fair, you can't get versions of this album that are not the one I have that are probably like $30.
Oh, like just a double LP? Yeah.
I just sent you guys a link to the one I have, which is...
No, I looked it up. The only ones for sale are that one.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, well, nice. Mine is will forever be worth a lot of money. I'm glad.
The CD you can get for $13, though.
Well, yeah,
or that's a as CD. Low as $2.
Wow. Yeah,
I'm not going to buy it on CD.
No? You sure?
Is somebody
Jamie, they're
the
coming
CD?
Back.
No, CD's nuts. I'm not buying it.
Surprisingly, there's actually a few CDs that I like wish I'd kept around because they're going for like $50 to $150.
Yeah,
which is crazy. Like, but
that
Jimi
Hendrix box set I was talking about a couple weeks ago, I looked it up again, and if it was in much nicer condition, like the CDs are fine, but the jewel cases are all kind of jacked up.
Yeah, same. Yeah. And the booklets.
If it was way more better condition, it would be worth almost $1,000.
Yeah, all my old Frusciante CDs are worth like a couple hundred each or something.
That's
I don't know.
Nuts.
Yeah, it's wild. I had never heard of these guys before at all, which is kind of
really?
It's kind of surprising.
Likewise, I should have said that.
Yeah, wow. I was surprised when you said that they're like really popular because, I'd never heard of them at all. And they came out when I was like in my senior years in high school. So. Yeah, I just don't remember these guys. Maybe it wasn't big back where I'm from. But I enjoyed most of it. Like, I definitely preferred the second half, especially, what's that one song? Hot Kiss, Swordfish Hot Kiss Night. That was really good. But
crazy name. We'll talk about that later.
Yeah. but I don't know. I really enjoyed it. Some of it kind of reminded me of the Ween album that we listened to before.
Interesting.
Yeah, songs like Delta Bay, or just the way the guy sings, kind of reminded me of him. Even
it reminded me of the beginning MGMT album, the original.
It's funny, okay. I have in my notes at some point. This reminds me of some MGMT.
And he, sure. I have a note that he has a real Cigarette Daydreams voice.
Like, okay,
you know the voice he uses in that song. And then I found out that album came out many years after this album came out.
It sure did.
So
great album.
I did not know what to expect because I searched Empire of the Sun. I thought it was the movie. Yeah,
yeah,
I thought
great
you
movie.
Bought. I thought you spent
so you
like
watched the movie.
I thought you spent a bunch of money on a movie soundtrack, and we were gonna listen to that. And I was like, well, okay, I guess so. And then
that'd be crazy.
And then the album cover popped up, and I was like, this is wild. Okay, sure. There's like a tiger on it and stuff. Mm-hmm. We'll talk
People
about
People are
it.
Dressed up like Prince.
Yeah, we'll talk about it more later. But like, I was like, all right, I have no idea what I'm getting myself into. And Purple then it Rain. Was, surprisingly pleasant. I liked most of the album. Some, minor complaints. But overall, it was pretty good.
Yeah, it's just for the record, apparently they're not named after the movie.
No?
Which I guess makes sense. Why would you name yourself after the movie?
I mean,
they're just like, oh, we live in a place where things are beautiful and you travel the world and or something. I don't know.
Sure. Sure.
Cool.
Or the book, I guess. I think it was a book before it was a movie.
Is there a book, too?
Yeah, it's a book. The movie is based on the book.
I would believe if Empire of the Sun just was what they called Australia because it's so hot and sunny.
I thought that was what they called Japan, but that's the land of
the rising sun. Yeah.
Australia's just the sun.
Yeah.
They are close to Japan.
They are. Lots of Australians go to Japan for that reason, for skiing.
Skiing?
Oh,
it's cheaper
to
fly to Japan and ski than it is to go to where it snows in Australia and ski. Little known fact for you. I'm looking at a Japan trip, so I know a lot of random facts right now. When I was writing my notes, because I've listened to this album quite a few times since getting the record, as well as just, being a fan of the band, remembered it as really liking the first half, not liking the second half. But what it is that I just don't like Delta Bay. I don't like Delta Bay. We'll get to the why, and I don't like Delta Bay. So I feel like once I like listened to it again and got past Delta Bay, and it was like, oh no, like the other songs maybe aren't quite as memorable to me. They're still good. And the last song, again, we'll talk about later, is really, really good in my mind. But Delta Bay is just I guess it throws me off every time, especially because it's the end of side A that I go, ugh, like I'm not looking forward to flipping it. But I ended up liking the second side.
It's a weird, creepy song, and it really reminded me of that Ween album, like quite a bit.
That is very weird to me.
Yeah. I don't know.
That song was very weird to me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
After just listening to the first four songs, which are bangers.
Absolute bangers.
Absolute fire.
Yeah, they front loaded.
Yeah. It's certainly a choice to have your four strongest songs one after the other, and then to put all your weird crap right after it.
Yeah, it's like they knew. They're like, these are the songs that will sell, and these are the songs we want to make.
One of them has 900 million plays.
I believe it.
I believe it's Walking on a Dream.
Probably.
It has like 898 million plays.
Yeah. I believe it. So I wonder if they just knew, and they're like, well, the second half is more like the stuff we want to make. Because both of their separate projects, I listened to a couple songs, are both like kind of like the second half, where it's just kind of like electronic pop music, but not like overly dancey pop. I guess PNAU is kind of more dancey, but I wonder if that was more like, yeah, they knew they had some hits. Because I also think the singles are all the first songs.
I mean, it's not uncommon, right? Like a lot of bands will front load their albums because they know that like that's what people want to listen to.
Yeah. But why don't we give it one last listen?
Sure.
On the Shore.
Great song.
Yeah, I like it.
It's a good introduction to the album.
Yeah.
It is. It's kind of a balance of some of the different things you'll hear. You also get to hear that. It's funny, because after complaining about Currents and the vocal effect, Empire of the Sun uses a vocal effect that feels like it lasts pretty much the entire time.
Yeah.
His range is, like, it varies enough that it doesn't feel too similar to me, but I don't know even how to describe it.
He does has like a lower register, and then he has like a falsetto register, and they're both okay.
Yeah.
It's
very unique.
He does a good MGMT guy voice, like from their first album, and a good like Cigarette Daydreams, Cage the Elephant guy voice.
Yeah, almost like his cadence is more like the lead guy from Cage the Elephant, I agree. Because this album came out a year after Oracular Spectacular, if everyone would keep referencing it. They kind of came out at a similar time.
Yeah.
I also feel like it also sets off that this album has a pretty high production value. For a first album, like you can tell that these guys weren't rookies to making music. There's a lot of different sounds. Things kind of faded in and out. They're not afraid to leave. Sounds, yeah, vocals in the background and stuff like that. It also shows a lot of almost like spiritual lyrics. They don't really mean anything to me, but like a lot of them are more like spacey or stuff happening in shores and space.
Yeah, there's some good imagery in some of them. Yeah,
I would understand if someone thought it was too long or repetitive, because most of the 4.5 minute runtime is just don't want to talk, all I hear is noise, don't want to talk, repeated or instrumental with some vocalizing. I like it though.
That's kind of my main complaint on any of their tracks, is I think some of them go a little too long or get a little too repetitive.
Mm-hmm.
But most of the time it's not like, oh God, next song, please. It's just like, oh, okay, they could have maybe cut 10, 20 seconds, something like that. You know, minor, not like, oh, I wish they'd cut a minute and a half from this.
Yeah, there's a lot of longer songs. Like there's quite a few 4.5 minute songs. Yeah. There's a couple that are 5 to almost 6 minutes long.
Yeah.
The shortest songs. Well, I mean, the next song, Walking on a Dream, is one of the shortest ones, which is like, oh, their most popular, you know, one of their best songs is actually one of their shortest, which is interesting. But again, maybe that's something where, you know, they knew that was going to be a hit. They made it a radio length right away. But yeah, on Walking on a Dream, it's a title track already. It's the second song.
Yeah.
And it's probably the best song on the album and probably one of the best Empire of the Sun songs.
Yeah.
What a song.
It's pretty good.
So good. I really like the synth in the background. It's like a blanket of sound that everything else just kind of sits on top of.
Mm-hmm.
The
metronome that sounds like a stove trying to catch.
Yeah,
like an igniter.
It was good too. Yeah.
Very good. Very catchy. It's positive. It's summery. It's instantly iconic and kind of stands out. It's just talking about how life is good, be in awe. Yeah. Two people finding each other, becoming one, pushing through moments together. Life is good.
Walking on a dream.
So the song didn't chart when it came out. It
no, was just Australian as a
signal,
charts.
Sorry, a single. We'll try that again. It was released as a single. It did not chart in 2008 or 2009. It charted in 2015 or 16 when it was used in the Civic ad in Australia.
Oh.
And now it has 857 million plays.
Well,
yeah, and it went again because TikTok got a hold of it, I think, like 3 years ago.
Of course.
So it kind of came back again.
What's going on with that? Are they, like, taking away music from TikTok or something?
Anything that's under the UMG. So interesting. Universal Music Group.
Yeah.
Okay. They just didn't re-sign the license.
Right.
Yeah, so it's popular. I guess it's, commercial. It's not like a Black Keys song, but it's pretty commercial-y.
Well, did you... Adam showed me the newest Black Keys commercial, or I say commercial, the newest Black Keys song, and it literally sounds like a commercial song. Like, it's wild how
The one from the High Rollers
album? I think so. Because, yeah, yeah. Like, I like a lot of Black Keys. They make a lot of good songs, but then that one is like, wow, gold come on.
On the ceiling.
Yeah, well, this song is super punchy. I like the acoustic guitar strumming and prominent drum beat, which pairs up great with the simple synth that plays throughout the entire thing, like Poof was mentioning. I mean, the song fades out, which I'm not a huge fan of.
Yeah.
But I don't think I would mind if the song was longer. Like, it feels short and it fades out where I'm like,
oh. 3 minutes and 18 seconds.
Yeah, I want the song to keep going and it's like just randomly fades out.
It's got a really
good
driving beat to it, too.
Yeah. I would just cut the fade out. I'm okay with it being like 3 minutes long. But yeah, the fade out is kind of annoying.
Okay, so two songs in, I'm hooked. I really like this album. We're going to the third song.
Half-Mast.
It's about a rocky relationship that's falling apart.
Yeah, you feel like you're at half-mast. It's also the song that gets sampled in The Spins by Mac Miller. And every time I start rapping along to it, because it's very catchy.
I was listening to this on Spotify in the car, and there's some other song that he like is featured on by them, I think. Can't remember. Maybe it's that one you just mentioned. But I actually liked it a lot.
Right?
I think I just don't like swimming in circles.
It is very different. Mac's old stuff is, I don't know if I'd go as far as say fratty, but it's like, you know.
It kind of, it kind of is.
Yeah,
he was younger.
It's high. Even half-mast, it's like, when I'm rich and famous, I'm going to have a movie theater and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
And it's funny because he uses a lot of this song. I didn't realize how much he leaves in. Like,
quite a bit.
The verses are left in and he'll kind of rap over it sometimes. The choruses are left in full. The outro is left in full. I was like, huh.
I really liked some of the imagery in this song. I wrote down one that I liked. Go hiking in the hills in a summer gown. That's a thing you could picture in your head.
Yeah.
I liked it.
Yeah, a lot of the lyrics are pretty cheesy, but in a good way, and I kind of like that for the most part. There's really just like a verse and two choruses. So even though
There's three never mind. Sorry, I'm looking at the wrong
one. There's really not much. It feels like there's more. But there's not.
And then it's just like a fade out, then fades back in kind of thing.
Yeah.
That's a slight return.
The only thing that I really liked the song. But the only thing I didn't really like too much was the kind of punchy drums. They're just like, I don't know. I had headphones on. Punchy. It's a little too punchy. Yeah. They're not bad. It's just a little too punchy.
Yeah. The backing track feels like a modern 80s pop song with its pulsing synths and some light guitar that strums throughout. And in this one, again, I think the vocals stand out as being quite impressive. It's fun, it's light.
Yeah.
It keeps the pace of the album moving really well, and it transitions very well into We Are the People.
We Are the
World. It uses the same strumming pattern.
Oh, I love it. It just like changes a key of randomly like through a strum. I was like, "Oh." And it's perfect cuz it's one of those splits where neither song suffers from the transition, which I've complained about in past songs. And We Are the People, probably my second favorite song.
Tears Smell Like Lemons.
Featured in the movie Hall Pass.
Was it?
No.
That's a bad movie.
That's not a good movie, yeah.
No.
I don't
know.
I'm turning that one off. I love the transition. It's another breakup song, but I feel like the vibe matches the lyrics closer than in the previous song. I do have to say I really like the high-paced beat with a bummer vibe feel this has.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Lots of talk about letting time go to waste, feeling things will never get better, and the lack of acceptance that things are over. I also like how they keep reminiscing about things in 1975, but neither of them were alive.
No.
They were born in like 1978.
It's just like a nostalgia thing. The whole album feels very 80s to me, especially like when I looked at the album cover.
Yeah.
I was like, well, did these guys just do a ton of cocaine or something? Mm. Like, I have no idea. But I fully agree. I think that's something they were just like trying to go for at some point. And they just decided, nah, we wish we were back then. So let's make music like we were. and talk about that stuff. Mm-hmm.
Which, again, they would have been like 9, 10.
Yeah, yeah. I really like his voice on this one, though. Mm-hmm. I thought it sounded really good. It's funny. I put almost, there's like 3 or 4 times where it's like, this is probably my favorite song. And then I was like, no, this is my favorite song. So it got, yeah, I don't know. For me, the second half was actually preferable, but I'm weird. I like a lot of weird stuff, so.
Yeah, I really like the bridge just after the 3-minute mark in this one. Yeah. It doesn't overstay its welcome, but it's a nice pace change. It has a fade out. I don't know if I would mind it in this one because, again, it is like 4.5 minutes long. So, like, you can kind of get into it and let it just fade out. Mm-hmm. But it just happens at a weird time because there's a part where he starts repeating, I know everything about you. You know everything about me. And if that was repeated and faded out, it'd be like, oh, like, it's, again, that lack of acceptance of the relationship. It just shows that, like, you know, you never get over it. But instead, it, like, goes back into the main little chorus and fades out there. And I was like, okay, sure. Sure.
Yeah, sure.
I want to do the science of why songs fade out. I need to know. Jamie, any thoughts?
No. No, on the song? No, we already got through all my... Yeah, we already got through on fade outs? No, I have no thoughts on that. They don't bother me. I don't even think about them.
Well, now we're here for Jamie's favorite song of the album, Delta
it's
Bay.
It's weird. It's weird.
I don't like the loud screech that starts it. It starts off negative for me. I know there's a Gorillaz song. I think it's Aries from their Song Machine album. It does the same thing, and every time that song comes up, I'm like, ooh, screechy, don't like it.
Yeah.
The vocals are weird and distorted, talking about drinking and smoking. I just don't think it's a super fun listen for me, except for the weird psychedelic chorus. The choruses last long enough, and it starts early enough that by the time I'm about to get up and change a song, like when it's, or like flip the record, I usually end up leaving it on, because I do like the chorus, but I don't like anything else.
It's not long, but it's long enough that I didn't like it.
It's the shortest song on the album by 4 seconds behind Walking on a Dream.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't hate it. It is very creepy and weird. I can definitely understand why a lot of people wouldn't like it. The drums are kind of back with that like punchy beat that I thought was not as overdone this time, so it was a little more palatable.
It's pushed a little bit farther back.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I think it works better here. But yeah, I basically just agree with you guys. I think that a few parts of the song are good, and then most of it not so much. Mm-hmm. And I would never choose to like actively listen to this song in particular again.
No, certainly not.
So that's the end of side A. So side B starts with Country.
Oh, my God.
Very pretty and very long instrumental to start the second side.
I love
5 minutes long.
Yeah. I love Country.
It's good.
It's so spacey.
It's a wild choice to make this the start, but it makes suffering through Delta Bay worth it. When you flip it over, I'm already grumpy, and then I flip it over, and I'm like, oh.
Yeah.
It's not bad. It's okay.
It changes enough throughout into something that's a lot more like airy by the end of it.
Yeah, there's a long buildup.
Yeah, and I actually really appreciated that so much. I went back and like listened to it again right after the first time, and I'd made some notes because I got distracted listening to it. I was like, wow.
It somehow paints a picture with doing and saying nothing.
Yeah.
It's a long buildup with some fast guitar picking that gets slowly drowned out by a louder, very country western guitar riff.
Yeah.
That's some fast drumming added and other ethereal sounds.
Yeah.
Truly unexpected.
Yeah.
Truly, truly unexpected.
Especially because, like, it's almost an instrumental. There's a few, like, and stuff.
There's
vocalization, but yeah, it's basically an instrumental.
There's no lyrics, but there's vocalization.
And we hadn't gotten that at this point, so I was really surprised.
Yeah.
And as soon as I listened to it the second time, I went and looked it up, like, where it is on the album, and as soon as I saw that it was the start of side B, I was like, that's perfect.
Yep.
It should be the start or the end of 100%. An album. Yeah,
it's funny. I love the crescendo. It's like building up.
Yeah,
and the crescendo is a pan flute added in.
Yeah,
I was like, whoa, what is this?
It works,
but it totally works. I was like, it's so hard to describe the song, and unfortunately, it's not gonna be one of the ones that I put in the one last listen. It's definitely worth checking out just to understand what we're talking about because it's so hard to describe.
Yeah,
listening to it digitally, I don't know if I like it following Delta Bay, but again, I think it's a great palate cleanser after actually flipping the record, especially, again, when I'm grumpy after listening to Delta Bay. To flip it over to this, I'm just like, my spirits are high again. Jamie, any thoughts?
Nope.
Perfect. Didn't want to hear from you. World. The world starts with a bit of bleed from Country, and I like the stripped back, almost metronome-like sound they used to kick it off. it's another song that kind of feels hard to describe. I'll say the vocals are a bit unique with the raw sound.
Yeah.
Sounds like he's singing in a cell or a cave or something. Yeah. It's got that like little bit of echo, but not reverb.
Yeah.
It's odd.
So there was a period in David Bowie's career after he recorded Ziggy Stardust where he did a whole bunch of drugs and then went to Germany and put out this weird bunch of weird music like Station to Station and Low and Heroes. Those weird albums. Well, no, they're not all weird, but anyway, they had some weird lyrics and some weird subjects and weird things, like he sounds like he's a million miles away from the mic. And this song reminds me of this weird period in David Bowie's career with weird songs where he sounds like he's a million miles away from the mic or in a cave.
Yeah. I really liked it. I liked the lyrics, especially the chorus, especially the bit about like the thousand red coats. Mm-hmm. A lot more imagery again. Not many lyrics for like a 4.5 minute song, but that's fine.
It's got a long kind of like a lot of the words are stretched out with vocalizing, like It's like, oh, okay.
Yeah, this one didn't feel long, while some of the others that were a bit longer did to me. But yeah, I really like this. This is the one where I said second favorite song.
Mm-hmm. I like the brief pause at a minute 48 where it's just a guitar and even some of the production cuts out, so it's like extra exposed for just a brief moment.
Yeah, it's really good.
And the choruses are really cool because it feels like, again, the vocal tracks have been kind of cut up or something, and there's no fade out.
Yeah,
I was like, wow,
it just ends. Yeah,
it's very floaty. I really like the feeling.
And then we get the best song on the album.
What is
the
this best title? Swordfish Hot Kiss Nice.
Tiger Rin Drugstore.
Crazy.
It's just full of like crazy lyrics.
It's a Beck song.
That don't make sense. Yeah. That's funny. I could kind of see that. Yeah.
You know what? The whole thing kind of feels like a Beck song. Yeah. I guess like Beck is not as screechy. But even then, like, I could kind of see it.
Yeah.
I'm not a huge fan. It's weird and repetitive.
It's
not
awful,
but it's weird and repetitive. And for some reason, it's longer than Walking on a Dream.
Yeah.
I'm like, why are some of these weird ones longer than... Anyways.
My money's gone south.
I love that line.
What does that mean?
Tiger in a drugstore. It's just so like... It's so 80s electronica pop. And a lot of the lyrics like sound like Michael Jackson singing too sometimes.
I didn't pick up on that.
No? Sounds like Thriller. Not Thriller. I'll find what I'm talking about and I'll show you guys.
Let me just say, Cowboy at a Cop Shop.
Yeah, it's great.
May I say more? Jesus on a Web Blog.
Yeah. I don't know what it means, but it's fun.
King's Cross Hotshot.
Yeah. Monster Goons. Mansion. So that's me and the boys. I'm all right.
Mansion in my mouth.
Hot Dog Belt.
Yeah.
Donut Melt.
I had the lyrics up on Spotify and I read them ahead of like the song really kicking off. And I was like, what the hell am I getting into?
Yeah, you're like, how is he going to get to these lyrics?
And then I was like, all right, I'm here for it. I really like the like, the vocal part of the beat. I thought that was great. It really reminded me of like old weird 80s electronica pop. Mm-hmm. This is the
Mansion
mix is just
in
wild.
My mouth.
Yeah, I love that line. It's great.
What does that mean?
I don't know. It doesn't matter.
It's a fun song.
Yeah,
it's fun. It's weird.
Yeah,
it's a weird fun song. Easily, it's kind of like Ween.
Yeah,
it's a weird fun song.
Easily my favorite.
Easily your favorite.
Oh yeah, easily.
That's weird.
I love this song. I've listened to it like so many times.
Swordfish Hot Kiss Night.
Yeah.
Breathing through the beat.
My only real note on this, other than my note of my money's gone south, is that this song is some weird nonsense.
Yeah, it's great.
Well, luckily the next one, it kind of seems like it's going to be nonsense with Tiger by My Side.
Yeah.
But it does make a bit more sense.
This one had really good cadence matching with the lyrics and the drums, and then the chorus comes in and it matches with the guitar rips like really, really well. I don't know, it just really stood out as just, I love it when instruments and vocalization matches like almost perfectly. It was really good.
I want a Tiger by My Side. I need to get that on the record. If I get a chance, I'm taking it.
Yeah.
The lyrics don't make a lick of sense to me, but the words that they're singing flow well, and they sound like they should make sense, it makes it a fun listen.
Yeah.
The beat of the song is fast, and it matches, like Ploof was saying, with its lyrical pacing, and the siren-like synths are almost anxiety-inducing, but I dig it.
I actually really liked them. I wrote very tasteful synths, actually. I really liked them.
There's a little break from 2:35 to 3:05, and I feel like it stands out because the song is so fast. It's like, oh, okay, I'm okay, and then it's like, okay.
My only complaint was the long fade-out at the end.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it's great, and another one that I really, really liked.
Yeah, this was one, again, that I remembered not liking, But I wonder if it's because, like, maybe I skipped it too early. Because, like, I don't know. Back in the day, I was listening to this in my iPod in 2009. I was probably like, nah, and skipped it. But now I kind of appreciate the weird and, like, bob my head. And, it, yeah, that chorus or bridge, whatever you consider it, because it's got a weird layout of the song, where it's, things start speeding up. Oh, so
good. Yeah, it's great.
So, so good. Then we get the final song, Without You. Another 80s.
Oh, you don't, yeah. You don't want me to talk about it? Oh, no, the song is called Without You.
Jamie, do you have any thoughts on the other one?
Tiger on my side?
No, I have no thoughts.
That's why I didn't even ask. I
said, he hated the second half.
Without You, it feels like an 80s breakup, heartbreak song.
Yeah.
But I dig it. I think it's a good way to end the album.
It's a good way. I said it ends on an okay note. This one is completely fine.
A song about how without the love of his life, there may as well be nothing. No hangovers, no colors, no future or past, nothing. And we've all been there, buddy.
Yeah.
It's okay. Yes.
I wrote, can't live because living is without you.
Mm-hmm. I wrote that it feels very final, and it was a really good ending for the album. Mm-hmm. It's probably not my favorite song on this side or across the whole thing, but yeah, it's fine. It fits where it does.
I like how it's stripped back. It's just some simple retro synths, a very digital sounding drum and reverby vocals. The song legit stirs up some emotion in me.
Wow.
I think the simplicity and classic heartbreak feeling is captured so well that it feels unique and yet like something you've kind of heard or, you know, felt before, even though it's all just general vagueness. It's like hearing a horoscope, right? You're like, yeah, that applies to me. But then you're like, well, I guess it kind of
applies to everyone.
Applies to everyone. Yeah. If you're in a happy relationship, you're sad that they're away. If you've broken up, you're sad that they're away. So, like, it kind of relates to multiple things. Mm-hmm. But I really like the feel. It feels like, again, some of the themes I've been exploring earlier, just in a more kind of complete and straightforward package. There's no crazy exploration. It's just like, let's nail that genre, which is sad 80s.
Yeah.
Jamie, you were a teen in the 20s? How old were you in the 80s?
In
you were
80s?
20 in the 80s? What was it like going through heartbreak in the 80s?
2 years older than me.
It's awful.
Lots of cocaine.
A cocaína.
Yeah, cocaína. I like the way it ended. The album ended better than the rest of the second half. I wasn't a huge fan.
Nah, you're crazy. That's
you think
wild.
This is on the same level as everything else in the second half?
I fully disagree.
No, it's better than the second half. Okay. It's better than the second.
I thought you said it was no better than. I was like, oh?
No.
Anyway, but I think the album's fine. They really had me going, though, for the first half.
Well, we're not done yet. We got to talk about the record itself.
I don't want to.
Let me get to the record itself.
Oh.
This is crazy. So, let's start with price.
It's a box.
Jamie, I'm talking about the record right now, okay? I know you're excited. Your feet are, it's like a little bunny. They're tippy-tapping on the floor.
I can see him shaking.
So, I got this through work, so I didn't have to pay for it because I got given $5,000 to spend, and I said, Linus doesn't like or understand records. Let's make him buy me $800 in records, a.k.a. three.
What was the third one?
Well, yeah, what was the third one?
I got a Ginger Roots City Slicker.
Sure.
Which was like
$40. Right. That was one that we tried to order and then they never shipped.
So it was like $40. This one was about $400. It is a box set. It is numbered 121 of 1,000. And the front is a lenticular display. So it's three dimensions.
Ooh,
and I have to say, it is pretty strong. Like looking at Empire of the Sun, that's three layers.
Ooh.
Yeah.
That is three layers of 3D.
I can confirm.
3D.
It looks really good.
It is like quite 3D. The front is Luke Steele in the front with bleach blonde hair and a white strip across his eyes and like face paint. He's wearing traditional Chinese garb, maybe.
I have no idea.
It's offensive to think that. And then Nick Littlemore is behind him, kind of dressed like a Lonely Heart Club Pepper Band, Sgt. Pepper's.
He looks like Prince in Purple Rain.
He looks like Prince in Purple Rain. But Nick Littlemore is holding an orb. He's pondering into it. And in front of them, because this is like an old movie poster, there's a tiger running in the desert, but in the air of the desert, there's somebody who's fallen into water, and there's a swordfish on the other side. And then above the swordfish is a gaggle of elephants just trampling through. And on the left, there's a ship on the water that they're sinking in and the elephants are running on. But there's also a space city. And above that's a planet with a bunch of lights around it.
Yeah.
And on the right side, there's like volcanoes and mountains and also like the CN Tower or something
yeah.
with a tree coming out of it. and then there's asteroids all around. Like, this is a crazy.
It is absolutely wild.
A crazy cover. The back is black because it's a box set. But if we open it up, we have the record itself, which is just a black record, 180 gram, nothing special. It's currently in the record player, so if you, I don't know what's on the label, but then we have the actual album or like jacket, like a regular jacket sleeve,
it's a gatefold,
which is a beautiful cover, very colorful, much easier to see now. And on the inside, we have more pictures. It looks like they use the Photoshop brush tool to make it look painted, of Nick and Luke. Luke wearing a traditional headpiece now as well. And there's a Krishna or something in the center. I don't know if that's offensive, but there's like an Indian god in the center with big angel wings with an eye above her in the sky. And there's like Mount Fuji and a old cathedral and planets. Again, very hard to describe.
I like the cover a lot more than I like the inside of the gatefold.
Yes, this seems like we're going for fun movie, and the inside seems like we're trying to be faux spiritual.
Yeah, it very much looks like a movie poster.
Yeah, and the back is just back black like space. There's some asteroids and a little bit of a moon, and just the tracks split up by side. Also in this box set, we have a DVD.
What?
Yeah, it's got The Walking in the Dream, We Are the People, and Standing on the Shore and Without You music videos with behind the scenes and Eclipse broadcast. It's 2024. I don't have a DVD player. I don't have a console, so I can't watch this. But it also then has the album, just like the music. It's got the music from the album, as well as some extra songs, Breakdown and Romance to Me. And then a bunch of remixes, some, or I guess just one, by Nick's brother, and the rest by other people I have never heard of. So that's cool. Then there's also a download code for Plouf.
Well, bet you that's been used up.
It's a physical card. This is like, no, because this was sealed.
Whoa, it's like a credit card.
I opened this for the first time. Yeah, credit card. Very ASMR. Then we have an art book. ASMR. The front has a cool picture of a tiger, and the back has a dove or something, and it's just like pictures that are kind of related to the cover and inner gatefold. Weird, spacey, spiritual photos, vaguely cultural appropriation, more Photoshop paint filter. And finally, we have the original idea for the cover. So it's like on a piece of cardstock, and it looks like it's been drawn in pencil with like the layout of how they wanted things, who was going to be where and stuff. And it's interesting to see how much the cover changed over time.
Yeah.
Apparently, 100 of the 1,000 were signed by Nick Littlemore. Mine was not that, unfortunately.
Dang.
Just a regular version. But for $400, that's a lofty asking price.
Yeah. It was probably only like 100, 150 when it was officially released, too.
This is not the most expensive variant. So this is really the only one that has all this stuff. There are ones that just have like a fancy, you know, record itself or whatever. Or there are some that are numbered as well. But again, it's just like red splotch or galaxy covered record. And the cheapest one I could find on Discogs, because I did not believe Jamie, was $180 before any sort of shipping. That was the cheapest vinyl that you can get out of this. And I think the most expensive was like $568.
Yeah, the cheapest vinyl is just the LP, not the box set. Yeah. Currently, the cheapest one right now is $130, but it's all beat up.
You don't want that one.
No. I don't want that one.
So it is crazy to me that the only version that is a box set is not the most expensive.
Yeah,
I guess some of those colors are right now
crazy.
$7,999.
Yeah, why? So that's not real. So it does not count.
Yeah, don't forget that a lot of people list stuff on Discogs, but that doesn't necessarily mean that's what it's worth. They've probably just got it up there, and it could be sitting there for a year without selling.
Yeah, it's a still factory sealed new copy from my personal archive.
Yeah, you got to go to like median price, or you can also check what the last copy sold for. Yeah. That's usually that's a much better indicator of what people are at least willing to pay for that record right now.
So Bells cost $400, correct? Is that what you said? There's currently one for 400 pounds
that is a sealed like five, copy as well. 550 Stocks, bucks.
Baby. I shouldn't open it.
You just should, kidding. Honestly.
No, I love this record. apparently the DVD has WAV files? WAV?
WAV, yeah.
You say WAV, eh?
I say WAV, but yeah. I don't know.
So if you want flax, go elsewhere.
That's okay.
So WAV files are more uncompressed than FLAC is.
Really?
Yeah.
I thought FLAC was better.
No.
FLAC,
doesn't FLAC mean like fully lossless?
But yeah. WAV is just CD audio. So it's completely uncompressed.
But if FLAC is lossless, then is that not completely?
No, it's still compressing. It's a compressed lossless format.
Yeah, okay. You just didn't lose any information.
Yeah, right.
Well, Jamie, let's start with you. You've been dead silent. You've been stewing. Steam's coming out of your ears trying to find a cheap copy
we
of
got,
this.
Yeah, after we got those first like four songs out of the way.
But I would love to know what your vinyl verdict is.
You know, they had me in the first half. I really enjoyed it. But when they started getting into the weird, more experimental stuff, they kind of lost me on it. And I think that's kind of the way they loaded the album, and probably on purpose. So after I got to side two, I was much less enthused by this album. But I didn't hate it. I think it's pretty good. And I think the strength of the four or maybe five good tracks on it, or tracks that I enjoyed on it, leave me to tell you that it's probably like a 9 out of 13.
Not bad.
You're right. It's not bad. But it's really propelled by my enjoyment of the first four.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Plouffe.
I thought it was a very interesting album that kind of took me for a ride. I didn't like several songs nearly as much as I liked others, specifically Delta Bay, obviously. And then usually when some of these are just kind of dragging on, they would lose me by the end of it as well, especially when it ended with a fade out. But when they're like jamming or singing about something that's a little more interesting, maybe even nonsensical, I think they're a really cool duo. Half of this album, or a little over half, is probably like a 9. But then the other half is like a 7, maybe even a 6 at times. And so I had a really hard time scoring it. I'm going to give it... I'm really torn between like an 8 or a 7.5.
Think of the record.
I know, that's the thing. The box set is incredible. If you're buying the box set, it's like an 8, 8.5. But if you're just buying the double LP, it's probably more like a 7, 7.5. Especially because... you're probably going to lean more towards the first half like Jamie did. I like weird stuff.
Wait, is it a double OP? I don't think it's double OP.
Oh, it's just a single
gatefold.
Oh, yeah. Oh, it's just a gatefold.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, that makes sense. It wasn't super long. But yeah, I think that most people are going to like Side A more, and so they might be a little more disappointed than I was. When it got to something like Swordfish, Hot Kiss Night, I was like, oh my God, I'm sold. But yeah, price is way too high for me to ever own this.
Mm-hmm.
I think that if We're the People was on side two instead of the second last song of side A, I would probably give it like an 8 or an 8.5 because then I would just listen to side B every single time.
Mm-hmm.
And I would think it was really a lot more solid. But they've got that weird mix where like I don't like some songs on side A and then I don't like a couple on side B. So it's hard for me to find one that's like perfect.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's good.
Yeah, I mean, this is easily one of the coolest records or best records I own. It's a complete package. Bonus art, album backstory, cool extras, and a cool friggin' 3D cover. All for an album that I almost like front to back. And best of all, I didn't pay a cent for it. This is easily an album I can give my stamp of approval. And though it's limited and worth a lot of money, I will definitely be listening to this on a regular basis. It'll be something I pull up for guests to see whenever possible for years to come. I'm putting this in the number 2 spot underneath I Love You Honey Bear by Father John Misty and above A New World Record by Electric Light Orchestra. It was nearly first place, but I Love You Honey Bear really is a fantastic album, and the pop-up book gatefold and listening instruction booklet might not be as rare, but it's still really cool and gets the edge of like, if there's a fire, I'm saving that over this. Do yourself a favor and listen to Empire of the Sun. Maybe buy a couple of these limited editions. Sit on them. Sit on them. Maybe burn them some mine's worth more.
Yeah.
I don't know. Don't do that, but you could. This is good stocks for me.
Well, sure. I still can't believe you put ELO like
that's a great
as
album.
High as he did. It's good.
That's a great album.
We are continually baffled by what Bell likes.
Yeah,
and
so
what
mystified.
Bell
and like the Father John Misty was like, okay, the album itself is really cool.
Listen, you are actually alone on this one, on Father John Misty.
I don't know. Jamie just said it was okay.
I've showed several other people or that album, and they've all come back and been like, that is literally amazing.
Wow.
It's fun.
Our friend of the podcast, Sven, friend of the podcast, Sammy Yu.
Sure.
You
other people already knew what it was, so I guess they're supposed
that's to. Cool.
But I loved it.
Sure.
I don't know. It's okay. It's not for me.
I'm on Jamie's side here. I think it's okay.
But when we final verdict, we look at the record itself.
That pop-up book was super cool. Yeah.
I'm just saying. Don't lose sight of the mission.
Yeah, you're right.
We're not album verdict.
That's true.
Which Rated actually, maybe I should knock down ELO because that's just a record. That was just a record, and yours wasn't even in great condition.
I have two. One of them is in better condition.
No. You didn't even give me the one that wasn't in better bad condition.
No, I gave you the bad one.
Well, next week, no, just kidding. We're listening to, like I said, we have a guest. It'll be Arthur Raphael choosing Life by Yeat. My God. That's crazy. It's no major spoilers, but what do you guys think of Yeat? Do you think you're going to listen to more Rage music?
Almost certainly not.
Also, almost certainly not.
You know what,
but it's something.
You know what, though? I feel like we learned something about modern music from that album. The direction music is going in.
What the kids are listening to.
Yeah.
I don't know. I feel like there's always been artists like that throughout the years. There's always like one kind of artist that does something a little different or a little new that other people don't like as much. Older people don't like as much.
Yeah, the Beatles probably drove people crazy. Like,
oh, yeah. They probably hated it. They're probably like, give me my country.
Where's
and
my
blues.
Jazz?
Yeah, where's my jazz and big band?
No one said big band. That's just you. Well, we know you like ska.
I like big band and ska. You can
like big
both.
Beat.
Big beat.
Yeah.
What is big beat?
Well, it's like a Fat Boy Slim or a...
Really? You call that big beat? I just call it house music.
Well,
I guess it's a subgenre of house?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. I've never heard that before.
Drum and bass, big beat.
I've heard drum and bass in like jungle, but I've never heard. I've never heard
big
beat before.
Big beat is like a subgenre of drum and bass.
That's not true.
That's wild.
As somebody who loves drum and bass and listens to a lot of,
I believe you're incorrect.
Well, pull it up. We got time. No, no.
Pull up big beat right now.
You're not gonna. I want you to be wrong on the podcast.
I've never heard a big beat in my life. I'm not saying that it's not true, Jamie, but I am. I'm very curious. I love Fat. Was Fatboy Slim is classified as big beat then?
Well, that's nothing close to drum and bass. That's why I'm so confused.
Yeah, it's just like house music. I wouldn't call it drum.
Big beat includes the Prodigy, the Chemical Brothers, Fatboy Slim, the Crystal Method, the Propeller Heads,
okay.
Basement Jacks.
So what kind of genre is it then? What are related genres?
It's big
electronic,
beat. Yeah.
Electronic, breakbeat, house, techno, acid house.
I could hear
maybe
it.
Maybe I don't know Fatboy Slim.
Maybe not, honestly. What about Prodigy?
Industrial dance.
What?
Never heard of Prodigy. Do they have the album cover with a crab on it?
Yeah. That's
I always think it's Crab Brave and then it says Prodigy.
No, it's Prodigy. Mm-hmm. And they got the Smack My...
Oh, yeah.
My lady. Yeah.
That's crazy. Don't do that.
And then, well, if you watch the video, it's...
Isn't
that turns
out
it's a girl. Yeah, it's all in first person, which was like... I don't know if they were the first ones to do that, but it was pretty crazy at the time.
Did you see that movie, Hardcore Henry?
I've always wanted to.
Did you ever see the last part of Doom?
Oh,
the
original, yeah. Yeah, I remember when that happened. That was one of the first movies to do that, I think. And it was like, what?
It's
a video game.
Hardcore Henry is just okay.
Yeah, no, it's funny because the video quality is not great because it is a GoPro.
Hilarious.
So, like, the video quality
like
is a GoPro, yeah. And on a movie screen, you can tell.
It looks bad.
Yeah, and there's, like, very obvious cuts at some points because, like, obviously they can't actually do it all in one
take.
That'd
be wild,
and stuff. Because it's supposed to all be in one take, but...
Sure.
Yeah, I don't know. The Rage music, I don't know if it's for me. I would be interested to listen to more, but you'll have to hear our more fully developed thoughts next week when we have someone here to defend their music.
Yeah.
So check that out. And again, check out my video, AMD Upgrade, Alliance Tech Tips. You'll see my cute little face. You'll see the records I got.
You can't make me.
You'll see my record wall.
Jamie's in it.
I'm not in it.
Yeah, I have a picture of you on my wall.
Oh, true.
So you'll get to see that in my apartment. Don't come
see
me at my apartment.
I refuse to drive
though.
To West Vancouver, wherever
he's
he
not in West Vancouver.
I'm in regular Vancouver. Okay?
Oh, he's in regular. I refuse to drive all the
You're
way
the one who's far away. Everyone says they live in Vancouver. That means you're the one who's far away.
It's true, Jamie. You're the furthest one.
I live
now.
In Langley.
Ew.
See,
they're filming The Last of Us here.
They
yeah,
do
that's
a lot
how
of things
decrepit
here.
It is.
Yeah, yeah, it looks like the apocalypse here. Anyway, it's beautiful.
Bye.
Goodbye. See ya.